This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I'm your host, Heather McFadden, and this is the place where I get to walk alongside you and connect you with people and resources so you know that you don't mom alone. And in this episode number 501, I'm welcoming to the show Dallas and Amanda Jenkins.
The whole point of the story is that Jesus came for the Herdmans as much as he came for us. We'd be missing the whole point of it if we turned them away. And that's when her daughter says, well, what if they ruin it for you? And she says, well, they probably will, but it's not about me. Yeah, and that to me is one of the most heroic moments in the movie. And that's what I've seen in my wife, Amanda, and my mom and my mother-in-law, is there are women in my life, moms who literally and figuratively put aside their own personal passions sometimes and their own personal desires for the sake of something bigger than larger. And that's not always only their family. Sometimes they bring their family into the process of sacrifice for the church or for the larger kingdom or for those in need.
If you don't know who Dallas Jenkins is, let me introduce you. First of all, his dad is Jerry Jenkins, and my OG evangelicals remembered Jerry for his best-selling novel series, Left Behind. Well, Dallas has made his own way as a producer and a director and creator of the popular Chosen series. If you have not watched The Chosen, this is your invitation to go do that ASAP. Today, Dallas and his wife, Amanda, are joining me to talk about their newest film, the incredible Best Christmas Pageant Ever. And I'm not adding best, that is actually the title. It is the title of a novel. And this movie has been in the works for 20 years in the Jenkins' lives. I've been reading the book with my kids for years, and I was thrilled when I saw the movie was coming out, and even more excited when I knew that Dallas would be directing it. It's in theaters right now as I'm recording, which is amazing. There's something called hold data that Hollywood measures the strength of a film, and The Best Christmas Pageant Ever has been holding in theaters and staying consistent for weeks. So let's keep that going. Go take your kiddos. It's funny, it's clever, it's precious, and it reminds us of the true meaning of Christmas. So let's get right to our conversation. Here we go.
Dallas and Amanda, welcome to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. It's so good to have you guys here.
Yeah, thank Hi. You for being here. You win the Christmas dress-up competition.
Okay.
We are
shout
not
out
wearing...
to Sam's Club, okay? Shout out to Sam's Club. Well, I went all out. And my boys gave me the hardest time. They're like, Mom, it's not Christmas yet. I said,
yes, it is.
Oh, it might as well be.
You step all over my Christmas spirit. I even dug out my copy of the Best Christmas Pageant Ever. And you guys can't see the video, but worst is crossed out. Best Christmas Pageant Ever that I read with my boys. And I even opened it up to go look at the first words. And guess what happened? It's falling apart, okay?
Oh, my goodness.
It's well-loved.
It is a well-loved copy. So this book crossed y'all's path. Tell me the story of how this all started.
Yeah, you start.
Yeah, I mean, I would take my littles into Pottery Barn Kids to play, not shop, but just to play.
Totally.
We couldn't afford anything in there. Mm-hmm. And at the end of one of our little sessions, I saw the book on the counter as kind of a little grab bag, you know, $3 at the register, and that I could afford. And I remembered it from when I was growing up. So I took it home and basically instructed Dallas that he was going to be reading it aloud to our children, you know, throughout the holiday season. which he did very
poorly. Well, we'll get to that. But I had read the book as a kid in public school, and also had seen the TV movie that was done in the early 80s, but I didn't remember much about it. And because I'd read it in public school, I wasn't prepared for what I ended up reading, which is a couple chapters in. It's very funny. It's very witty. It's very nostalgic.
So funny.
And I'm like, man, this is so good. Like, I don't remember it being this good. Like, this is for everybody, not just kids. Yeah. And there were a couple of moments that I would also get a little choked up reading, because I'm like, man, this is really Jesus-y. Like, I don't remember it being this Jesus-y, especially having read it in a public school. We get to the last chapter and I start crying while I'm trying to read so hard. I can't see the pages, and my kids are looking at me funny, so, and it's ugly crying. And Amanda's like, and part of it, you're a little choked up too, because it's sweet. But then you don't know the next sentence because I'm crying. So you're wondering why. You're like, oh, give me the book. Yeah. Give me the book. I'll read it. She starts reading and she starts crying so hard that we have to pass it back and forth while the other one,
sentence by sentence, taking turns reading this book.
And our little kids are just completely like
missing it.
Yeah. So I finished the book and I said, I have to make this movie. Why isn't this a movie? It's the perfect, something I'd been looking for most of my life, which was a movie or a show that was good enough and witty enough and interesting enough that it was for everybody. Yeah. But it also had a strong faith message. And usually it's all or nothing. Usually it's either super high quality, everyone can watch it, but nothing about Jesus, which is the majority of our Christmas classics, many of which I absolutely love. Or it's all about Jesus and it's super faith-based and no one other than the church will watch it. I'm like, this has been read in public schools.
Yeah, there's a reason. I mean, it's
just so good. So I pursued the rights. I Googled and found out who held the rights. And I found that there were these three guys who had a friendship with the original author, who's no longer with us. And they had it set up at a big studio. So I'm talking to them and I'm giving them my pitch. And I'm like, I was made for this. It's the story of these, six awful kids on the wrong side of the tracks in poverty. They're mean, they're bullies. Everyone thinks they're the worst. They hijack the town's Christmas pageant, the church's Christmas pageant, and no one wants them around. They think they're going to completely ruin it. And of course, their poverty and their outsider status brings them in many ways closer to the heart of the true story of Jesus than everyone else. And I'm like, it's kids, it's Christmas, it's troubled kids. Amanda and I are adoptive parents, and our extended family are adoptive parents. So all of these things we have a passion for. So they're like, that's really great, but we've got it set up with another studio and a big director. And I was at the time, I'd made a couple of movies, but nothing of import.
Yeah, kind of set us up to the time. Like, when were you guys reading the book and crying? Like, what year was that?
Yeah, we should have said that. Yeah, almost 20 years ago.
Yeah. So 20 years ago,
this
idea comes up to you.
Yeah.
You're pitching it and finding out they have a quote unquote big name director. Who cares? Yeah. Well, big name director, and
they really cared.
I think they care. Yeah, when they're spending money, they sometimes do care. But whatever. So what year was that? Because this is, I think, prior to The Chosen. But
well before The Chosen. This was back almost. This is like 2005, 2006
or seven.
Yeah. So
before you'd even made like The Resurrection, like of Gaston.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I had done. I hadn't even done What If yet, which was my first movie that had a fair amount of success. So I every year would bug them about the rights, check in. I would
which is just Google. Very ballsy, by the way. Can we just
that's
this me. Is how passionate you were. this is how passionate you were about this project, though, is what I'm saying.
So and I would also check, I would just Google search like best Christmas pageant ever movie updates, just hoping that I wouldn't see.
Hoping to not see it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Hoping to not see that it's advanced in its development.
And so a couple of years into it, they kept saying no, or we renewed the rights with the studio and I heard that they had a certain storyline that they were planning to do that I was so upset about.
Changing the book.
Yeah. So I was just like, so a couple of years into it, I put a reminder in my calendar on both my phone and my laptop. Just that would come up once a week. And all it said was pray for pageant, three words, just to remind me to keep praying for this project. And I'd like to say that I had a godly prayer of just may your will be done and whatever it is, I'll rejoice in it. No, I was praying against anyone making it.
It was one of those like, please.
Yeah. And I really did. There is a difference, Heather, and I'm sure you've experienced this, and I'm sure you've had guests who've experienced this. I'm sure this is common of everybody. where you feel a calling on your life or a dream or a desire. And it's hard to know if it's from God or if it's just your own flesh, your own desires. And I've had both, right? And typically the test of whether or not something is from God as a calling is time. You know, if it just never lets you go, if it's just always something that's there. And, you know, the Bible, of course, is a guide for that. Your spouse, you're a mentor, you know, you want to test it because it's very easy for us to confuse a God calling with just our own goals. Right. Mm. So, but this just never left me. And so every week I would pray for Christmas pageant, and every year I would check in. About 5 years ago, I checked in again and they said, well, we didn't renew the rights with the original studio. They couldn't get it made. We were pretty frustrated. Now there's a new studio that's even bigger, that's really excited about it. And so I'm like begging them over the course of a couple of weeks. I've now had a couple of movies under my belt. I'm a little more successful, but just still not enough. And they finally told me, no, we're going to go with this new studio. And so I knew it was over. And I went to Amanda and I said, they just said no. And I think it's done. And we were both upset and, you know, teary eyed. And I went back into my home office and I sat down and ping, like taunting me, the pray for pageant pops up on my calendar. And I grabbed the mouse and I moved the cursor up to hit delete. Oh, and I said, no. I can't do this anymore. I can't keep praying. I can't keep hoping for something that's clearly not going to happen. And one of those few times in my life where I just really felt strongly that God was putting something on my heart, just said, don't do that. Don't do that. And I wanted to, and I finally said, okay, fine. And I decided, okay, I'll pray for pageant again. And I was like, okay, God, whatever you are is, and pray that I can have this project.
Really heartfelt is what it sounds like. Yeah.
Clearly,
so
you know,
godly.
Yeah. The guy who does the Jesus show isn't always as godly in his prayer life as people wish. So, and then
human.
Amanda walks in.
Sounds human. Yeah, yeah.
Well, Amanda walks in and she's like, I was just praying and I really felt like God was putting on my heart, this isn't over. I just don't think it's over. And I was like, crap. I don't want to get my hopes up again. So then just a few years ago, I checked in again and he goes, call me. And I'm like, wow, that's interesting. So I call him and he says, it's so funny you reached out, because just a week ago, the new studio forgot to renew the rights.
Oh my gosh.
And they're trying to convince us to renew, but we haven't been thrilled with it. And a couple of days ago, my mom called me and said, have you heard of this show called The Chosen?
Speaking of moms.
Yeah.
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 The best.
Yes. There should be a podcast about that.
I know.
So,
you shouldn't do it alone either. Yeah.
Yeah. So she says to her son who held the rights, she goes, have you heard of the show called The Chosen? He says, oh, that's funny. The creator of that show was always bugging me to do the best Christmas pageant ever. And she goes, are you crazy? He's the only one who can do that movie. You better give him the rights. And he's like, well, I have to listen to my mom, so let's talk. Mm-hmm. And so the fact, Heather, that I'm on a podcast now that we get a chance to say, in theaters right now, there is a movie called The Best Christmas Pageant Ever, and we made it, and it's out now. It's a calling fulfilled for sure, and so we're so thrilled. And then the response to the movie has been overwhelming as well, from the box office to even the critics. The New York Times liked it, which we didn't expect. So that's been really a wonderful, wonderful gift.
No, I'm a pretty critical movie watcher, and it checked my boxes, all of them. I loved it. When I heard they were making the movie, I was like, yay, they're making the movie. And then I saw, and Dallas is making it? In my mind, I thought, this is so great. Like, you've had all this experience now with The Chosen. The quality will be high, which for me has always been such a little pain point of why can't Christian movies be the most creative, the most well-made, kind of like the Tabernacle was, they brought in the best artisans. Right. I just heard the other day that was the first time like Empowered by the Spirit was used, that these artisans, these craftsmen were empowered by the Spirit to create. It's like, yes. So
let's do that.
And many of them were from pagan lands that,
yes,
that weren't part of the, yeah, weren't part of the faith,
Jewish,
but
yeah. Anywho, very well done. I definitely want to meet the casting director, because those kids, I mean, I was all over Google today. The little teeny Gladys, who's apparently got a million followers. Whatever, 8-year-old. Okay.
Yeah. She's a future gymnastic superstar, and also her mom has got her on got an Instagram account going. But yeah, I'll tell you this: you are meeting at least the co-casting director, which is my wife Amanda. We had a great casting director on this project. Her name is Jill. And she, of course, does the first step and has a hand in all of it. I mean, she and her team have great wisdom and experience. But ultimately, I'm the final say, of course, and Amanda has always had great instincts when it comes to casting. In fact, a lot of the lead roles in The Chosen were based on her passion and instinct for who could really inhabit this character. So she did also a lot of the grunt work after our casting directors did the first round and narrowed it down to like hundreds. Then she would narrow it down to a dozen, and then many times narrow it down to one and just say, I found the person.
Make demands.
Yeah.
No, I need to hear. Amanda, tell me about the process. Like, what was that like for you? And what did you'd read the book how many times since then? Did you read it then every Christmas in those 20 years?
Oh, yeah. We've read it every Christmas. I mean, years and years. Yeah. I mean, the reality of stepping into it, you know, you finally get it. And that's, you've been pursuing it so long. And that's so amazing. And then it is like, oh my gosh, we have to bring this to life. And we have to find the people who can pull off not only what's in our own heads, but then in, you know, your head and all the other people who loved the book, right? It's just a lot of pressure. I will say, what was so interesting about this casting process was when you're doing casting on tape, you're watching people read lines on camera, and then there's a reader off camera. And with kids, it's usually the parent. And so I suddenly realized after 5, 6, 7 people in a row that lots of words were being mispronounced that we know from birth, it seems, like frankincense and myrrh and
words we take for granted.
King Herod.
Yeah. The Christianese. Yeah.
Words in the Christmas story that are normal to us were being mispronounced like they had never heard it, like they were sounding it out, which of course they were. And so when a kiddo is saying it wrong on camera, you know that the parent doesn't know the word either. And I just was suddenly struck and overwhelmed by not only are we so excited to make this film, but how necessary the film is, how introducing the story of the Nativity in 2024 is really important and needed. And all of a sudden I'm crying, not just for the people who are going to see it, but for these kiddos that we're about to cast. And so that was a really interesting layer. It's always true for us because we do try to hire the best people. We don't just hire Christians, but it just struck me, especially with the Christmas story, and you just assume everybody knows it. So we found our people and we got to build this little family, you know, of the Herdman ne'er-do-wells, and we knew who we wanted, and we got every first choice that we had, we were able to cast. And so it was just, I love our cast. And then of course our leads, Judy Greer and
Pete Holmes, Lauren Graham.
I mean, it was just the gifts that kept on giving and then what they brought to the project. I mean, it was just, the cast was so fun to see it come together.
Amazing. I mean, for y'all listening, if you don't know, Judy Greer, best friend of Jennifer Garner, 13 going on 30, Pete Holmes, comedian, and of course, Lauren Graham, mom and Gilmore Girls that we all love, but you don't see her till the very end. And it's like the secret. It's like the secret that nobody's talking about, that Lauren Graham is in it.
You hear her the whole movie.
You hear her, but you don't know. You don't know.
Yeah, it's a fun reveal at the end. And she really ends up being a major contributor just as we got to be even in the studio with her and hearing her narrate. And all of a sudden, that's the voice in our heads from reading the book. You know, it was the narrator's voice and she did it so beautifully. And she's so funny and full of heart. So it was great.
And it was bugging me the whole time. I'm like, I know this little girl playing Beth. How do I know this little girl? I've seen something she's in. The TED Talk.
She does
on Thrive by Five on the Power of Peekaboo. Y'all, I'll put a link in the show notes. She's the most adorable thing ever.
Yeah. She's extraordinary. Her name is Molly and she's from the UK. She actually has a UK accent.
I know.
That she hid in Best Christmas Pageant Ever.
She's a special little cookie and a special
girl.
So going back to what you were saying about, you know, the power of being unfamiliar with the story and getting introduced to it, what I always love in a good story is to not just have one perspective. And I think what the Herdmans bring is that alternative perspective, asking the questions that you don't want to be the one who's like, what does that mean? There's no room in the inn. What the heck? Like, why did that happen? Yeah. That they got to ask the questions that someone might be nervous or embarrassed to ask. It was the most endearing part to me. Like them poring over books in the library, I was tearing up over that part of the story. And I don't know if that was supposed to be a tearjerker part, but anywho, talk to us about like that aspect of kind of
a back door to the Christmas story.
Well, that's what we do with The Chosen, is it's the old, old story, the greatest story ever told, that what we're trying to do is maybe help you feel like you're hearing it for the first time. Yeah. Even though, of course, you're not. In fact, even non-believers, the majority of them aren't hearing it for the first time. They've heard most of these stories in some way, but we don't change the story. But by telling it through a different lens, a different perspective, it unlocks things for you that, and for us as the storytellers, that you hadn't considered before. And how many times have you, in a sermon or a song, or hopefully in The Chosen, we hear this a lot, and hopefully in Best Christmas Pageant Ever, which we've heard a lot, people going, oh, I've never realized that, or I've never thought of that before, or I never considered that, or I never seen it from that angle. Mm-hmm. And seeing the nativity story through the eyes of those who typically we wouldn't want to be part of our tribe. We would think they're going to intrude. They're going to negatively influence. In the movie, the church is like, these kids are so bad that they're going to ruin the sacred things that we hold dear.
And the first sentence is, the Herdmans were absolutely the worst kids in the history of the world. That's how the whole book starts.
Yes, I mean, and that's how the movie starts, yes.
And they smoke cigars, people. I mean, heaven forbid, cigars.
Even the girls. Yeah.
Even the girls.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, they're going to ruin this sacred thing. Like, it's not for them.
And real quick, what's a funny little side note on that, it also says they smoked cigars, they stole, they fought, and they swore, or they took the name of the Lord in vain. And we talked about that a little bit, like, are we gonna show that? Because it's one thing to show stealing, they're not actually stealing. It's another thing to say, you know, the Lord's name in vain, right? But here's the thing. I became passionate about including it because of exactly what you're talking about. I feel like we, and I say we because I'm guilty of it too, but I feel like the church oftentimes really, we say we want people to come as they are, but we actually would prefer they clean it up before they walk through the doors of the church or before we hang out or whatever. And that is just not who Jesus was. And so what I love about this is that the Herdmans come crashing in uninvited, just as they are, swearing and smoking and fighting. And now the church has to grapple with these kids just as they are. And it's not that they get to stay that way. And Jesus doesn't let us stay that way, but it's a process. You start to see a process of change, but it really is a come as you are message too, that I think the church needs to be reminded of. I know I always need to be reminded of it all the time.
The movie is PG, by the way. So you're not hearing swear.
No. And to me, even when Imogene says it, it's almost like this, not taking the Lord's name in vain in the way that, I don't know, can be more bothersome, but more of just like this awe, like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, you could almost say it in a holy way, the way she says it. Like,
Right. But anyway, they say in the movie, they're like, no, we don't say God's name.
Yeah, there's correction. Like,
yeah, but my, the point is, seeing their journey is something that I'm obsessed with as a filmmaker. It's what we do in The Chosen that hasn't been done in Bible projects before. Because in a TV show, you have the time to develop the character journeys and see who these people were before they met Jesus, like we see in the Gospels.
Yeah.
And in a movie, you want to have a good character arc. And so you have a beginning, a middle, and end. So we see who the Herdmans were before. We see their process, their journey of discovery. And that's what makes it so beautiful. And that's what makes even the climax of the film more impactful, like it is in the book, is because you've seen this childlike faith, even though it's broken, even though they have absentee parents and that they're in poverty, they're broken, but their brokenness is what allows them to see things that the others don't see. And it gives them, as you said, the confidence to ask questions that others don't feel comfortable asking. And then when they learn it that way, they portray in the Christmas pageant, it's the title of the movie. They portray how they see Joseph and Mary. Mm. And it's more accurate than what we typically see in the nativity.
It's more human. It's more human. Yeah. And they bring the humanity of Jesus, which is what The Chosen does too. Yeah. The humanity of Jesus and the humanity of the story.
Yeah. And of Mary and Joseph, of how they would have been refugees and outsiders and in over their heads. And so when heaven meets earth in this Christmas pageant performance, and Imogene, the worst kid who's playing Mary, experiences the Christmas story for the first time, it becomes the same for everyone watching, and they all learn something from each other. And that whole process is what wrecked us when we read the book and what we were so desperate to accurately portray in the movie.
It's fantastic. I was just thinking too, what brought them to the church wasn't their awareness of their need for Jesus. It was hunger. And I was thinking about your two loaves and fish, like it's hunger. Like there's this meet, there's a basic human needs. And then if we meet it or we recognize it in people, the spiritual needs will come to the surface too.
Yeah.
We have
what's, great point. Oh,
we have the way to feed them.
Yeah. You're choking me up right now. Yeah, absolutely. And especially heading into the holiday season when they're, you know, it's not just, we shouldn't just do it at this time of year, but the reminder of meeting people's needs in order even just to earn the right to tell the story. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And every work of God, every revival, whether it's personal or on a mass level, is preceded by hunger, is preceded by desperation, is preceded by brokenness or surrender. It's what happened to us in our personal lives before The Chosen. It's what happens to these characters in The Best Christmas Pageant Ever. And sometimes we don't realize it. Sometimes God has to break us down or cause us to surrender or humble us like he does for some of the characters in Best Christmas Pageant Ever. But the Herdmans had no problem expressing their hunger and their need. We're coming to church because we heard there's snacks. Where's the snacks? Oh my goodness. It happens to be a food drive this today.
We can work with
this. We can work with this. This is perfect.
We can work with this.
Yeah.
Canned food's good too. There's so many scenes I could talk about. I'm thinking about this Christmas pageant as a representation of this whole kingdom pageant we're in, you know, like the God is bringing the kingdom to earth and the kingdom of heaven to earth. And we get to play a role. We each get assigned a part, like even beyond like the calling you were talking about. I like the language of assignment, like your interests, your experiences all kind of come together and God has assigned you at this time, not before The Chosen and not 20 years ago, but like right now, this is the perfect intersection of the space he's asking you to occupy, which is the Hebrew definition of humility, right? Is to occupy your space. So if we all did that in this massive pageant, you play the role of the angel, you play the role of the shepherd, you know, his kingdom comes. What I'd love to talk about is the mom piece of this movie that kind of can rub some people the wrong way. I try to talk about it a lot, is like, are we building our own kingdom for our kids? Like, what's her name? The Wendelkins with Alice. No, she's going to be Mary. You know, I want my child to play Mary. I want my child, even the pastor's son, he's doing it just because so his parents will be happy, right? Like he doesn't want to be Joseph. Have you experienced that? Or like, how do you work through your own setting aside of personal kingdom for your kids to pursue this bigger kingdom project of The Chosen and all the things you're doing? Like, have you seen that tension for yourselves?
Well, yes. So there's a lot to unpack here. And that's what's beautiful about your podcast, is we have the ability to do that. In many ways, this movie is a love letter to moms. And I want to be very, very clear. All moms who love their kids and who are providing for their kids, whether it's in the home or whether it's at work, are heroes. It's not often you see in a feature film a stay-at-home mom given the same heroic treatment that the mom who's at work does. Now, again, I want to say it very clearly. There's no right or wrong here. I'm just saying that in this movie, I follows the book. The mom is a stay-at-home mom who volunteers to do something challenging. And the more challenging it gets, the more, the more passionate she gets to do the right thing. And this movie honors that. Now, to your point about the kingdom side of things versus the personal kingdom or the larger kingdom. There's a scene near the end where the daughter of Judy Greer's character, you know, this is the main girl who's experiencing this story. We see the story through her eyes, and her mom, who is the one who's volunteered to direct the Christmas pageant. The daughter is saying, "We need to get rid of the Herdmans because they're going to ruin this for you. They're going to embarrass you." And she even says, "What if they ruin it for you?" And after Grace says, and her name is Grace, which is perfect, but she says, "The whole point of the story is that Jesus came for the Herdmans as much as he came for us. We'd be missing the whole point of it if we turn them away." And that's when her daughter says, "Well, what if they ruin it for you?" And she says, "Well, it's not a, they probably will, but it's not about me." Yeah, and that to me is one of the most heroic moments in the movie. And that's what I've seen in my wife, Amanda, and my mom and my mother-in-law, is there are women in my life, moms, who literally and figuratively put aside their own personal passions sometimes and their own personal desires for the sake of something bigger than larger. And that's not always only their family. Sometimes they bring their family into the process of sacrifice for the church or for the larger kingdom or for those in need. And they set that example. And that's what this movie is, a love letter to.
Yeah. And I think now it's so interesting. When I was raising kids, we weren't doing it on social media. I feel like now, not only are moms momming, but they're doing it in front of the world largely. But even as a young mom, I remember really wanting things to go the way that seemed right to me. And we were just thrown every curveball by the Lord to, we adopted a kid. We had an autistic kid. We had a chronically ill kid, have a chronically ill kid, all these things that really changed the way I thought my kids would feel and act and interact with the world. And there's just a lot of times where I remember having to handle a tantruming kid in a mall in a way that I believed was right and good, but I was really embarrassed, or, you know, all those things that your kids kids are such a wonderfully built-in humbling tool, totally. Which is amazing. And so whether I was choosing it or whether it was being done to me, it is oftentimes how things went. So I do love that in this film, she chooses the right. And I think we do need to, as moms, choose the right and stop doing it for the post, the social media post. Yeah. I think kids are a beautiful way of keeping us low. And for us to learn to not put our own expectations or our own stuff onto them either.
So, and sometimes God calls you to something that is going to make it more challenging at home, like The Chosen for us, you know, the 4 to 5 months a year that I'm filming. And that's where you realize, okay, the traditional model here isn't going to be how we're operating, you know, the 9 to 5, come home and everything's the normal. But it is important then to bring your kids along in whatever God has called you to. And to remind them of why we're doing it and to let them participate in the victories, whether it's the stories of impact that are happening all over the world, to make sure that they're part of that so that they see the fruit of it. But then to also not overcorrect and go so far into your ministry or into your job, yeah, or whatever it is, that you do sacrifice your kids at the altar, mm-hmm, of your own ministry or business or job. So there is that middle ground that we have to find that's not always easy. But going the other way too, where you don't do anything of impact outside of your family because you're only concentrating on raising the best, brightest kids you can for 18 years, and they miss out on, you miss out on some of the larger kingdom building that you can do as a family.
So well said. Yeah, it's this balancing act. I think you portray beautifully in the film. I don't know, I was cheerleading just the other way. I love how even Grace's husband is for him. Pete Holmes' character is for her in this process and by her side. Like, I feel like it showed a really positive marital interaction between them.
Yeah. That was really important to us. For the dad to not be the dumb guy sitting on the couch. So you have a couple of those moments where he's making the joke, yeah, or where he's like, oh gosh, I don't want to be part of this. I don't want to do this. But then when the train has left the station, he's on board. And in fact, he takes a leadership role a couple times to say, all right, guys, I'm hearing you complain so much about the Herdmans. I get it. They frustrate me too, but let's also show you what it's like to love and serve. And there's what many people would consider the most powerful scene in the movie is when he leads the family to deliver kindness to this other family in need. And then, of course, he's the one in the back of the room for the performance, running the lights, running the sound. He's going to be there. It's funny, and we play for some laughs, and he doesn't come, you know, easily, like most dads don't, to church projects and to volunteer initiatives. But
that's what I signed you up for.
Yeah, exactly. But he's, we made sure that we, and that was actually an argument at one point with the studio of like making sure that I said, look, the dad has to have agency. He has to have leadership. He can't be the sitcom dad sitting off to the side cracking jokes and being lazy. Yeah, this was our chance to into a mainstream Hollywood movie that's out in theaters all over the country, a chance to get in some of these values that you don't normally see in those kinds of movies.
Yeah, I love that. I also, speaking of husband and wife, the scene where Mrs. Armstrong, who used to lead the pageant, she's the one who broke her legs.
Right.
Her husband's watching the final product and just tickled because here's the story, Morning Glory. We could do the same boring thing in faith, in religion, in church, and we can all do it out of tradition and be bored to tears, or we could pursue the gospel. We can invite the outcast and outsider. We can shake it up a little bit, and there's so much joy. Like to see the transformation, even of the hardest, even Mrs. Wendelkin, who wanted her way. Like, but Mrs. Armstrong's husband, his joy over watching the pageant, I loved that piece. Like, he's not even a character we saw until that moment, I think, maybe.
And I love that he stands on it with her. She's irritated at what the kids are doing in the pageant, and he's thinking it's so funny. And then he's like, well, of course this would happen. And she actually is receptive to him. And you
see
we
can share what it is. I mean, this may be a little bit of a spoiler, but when they come out, Imogene, who's playing Mary, starts burping baby Jesus because that's what she did for her little sister when she was raised.
She had taken care of her little sister.
And so the former pageant director says, well, this is not in the program of the burping the baby Jesus like he had colic. And the husband goes,
"Oh, it's irreverent."
Yeah, and the husband, who, by the way, does show up earlier in the movie. Okay. He's at the very beginning when the window's broken by the baseball. And he's the one holding up the baseball. Yeah. So he's been victimized by the Herdmans too. And he says, well, I like it. He goes, you don't think the baby Jesus needed to burp? And she kind of has this, huh. Like at first she's annoyed, but then she realizes those two were so good in that moment. And it's one of my favorite moments.
It's quiet, but it's so, I love because they are the kind of the picture of the turn in the crowd at large. You know, you're seeing, they're putting words to what's happening in the hearts of the people who they're watching. I love that.
Yeah, no, that would, to me, was a really great part. Okay. I know we have got to wrap up our time. I feel like there was one more thing I was going to say, and I'm so old that my brain just lost
you're
it.
You're in good company.
Well, we'll do the response and then you can cut in the comment later. Thank you so much for the amazing words about the movie and about our show. It's just I've never heard anything so complimentary and positive.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So what a great way to end the podcast.
Okay. No, what was it? Oh my gosh. I'm totally blanking. It's fine. Okay. Y'all, this movie is fantastic. Everyone needs to go see it. We're releasing this December 9th. So you think this is going to stay in theaters, right? Because everyone's going to keep seeing it every weekend.
Yes. Hopefully the movie did well through the Thanksgiving gauntlet of competition with Wicked and Gladiator 2 and Moana 2.
And Nutcrackers. What's happening?
So if we can survive into December where people are now looking for a Christmas movie.
The story of Jesus can survive into December.
Yes. So
we're still in theaters.
As you listen to this now, if you were waiting till Christmas to see it, please don't. It might not last that long. So just please go check it out now. It does demand to be in theaters just because of that communal experience. And it's been so long since we've had a good Christmas classic in theaters because there's always dozens of movies that come out every year on Hallmark and Lifetime. But something that the whole family can enjoy, I think, has become increasingly rare. So hopefully this will continue to do well.
Well, we love it. We love watching Imogene own her version of Mary, a strong, brave gal. And thank you guys for being strong and brave and occupying your God-given spaces. Love seeing your teamwork together and making really creative, well-done works of art. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. That means a lot. And keep up the great work on the podcast, too.
Thank you. Wouldn't you know that after I got off the call and like an hour later, I remembered what I wanted to ask the Jenkins or what I wanted to talk about. So we meet the Herdmans in the movie and we never meet their mom. The whole movie, we don't meet their mom. And I was thinking about this Don't Mom Alone community and this message that I keep trying to communicate to y'all, not to allow motherhood for you to bear the full weight of it. You need to share the load with those around you. And I was thinking about their mom and we don't know her story. We don't know what caused her to not be around. But I found it very interesting once these women in the church move past building their own kingdoms for their kids, they cared for the Herdmans, especially the main mom, Grace. Like they filled in the gaps. And anyway, it was just another encouragement to me of the power we have in communities, whether moms are physically present or not, to be there for one another and to say the words that kids need to hear. Anyway, that struck me. So I really do hope you go and see this movie. I'm going to pray over us. Lord, I thank you for the good news of Jesus. I thank you that you came. I thank you that you enter our stories, our messy stories, that you provide truth in your presence. And I pray, Lord, that this movie would be a reminder to so many of us of your love, and that we would see outside of our little formulas and boxes and some traditions that are not as welcoming, Lord, that we could see those who need you and to open a hand to those around us to show the true meaning of your son coming into this messy world. I thank you for the Jenkins. I pray a blessing over them and all of the ways they have their hands in so many different things that are telling others about you, that you would, that there would just be a protection around them and their family. And Lord, just draw our hearts to you this season and all of the busy and all of the distractions, that we could quiet ourselves and come before you and just have wonder and awe at the birth of Jesus. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, y'all. Thank you so much for joining me. Next week, I have a friend, Julie Fowler, sharing her story on the show. It's going to be a great resource for either you or friends you know that have walked through infertility. And this time of year can be pretty hard for all of us and any part of our story, but I just wanted to provide some resources for you on the topic. So join me here next week. All right. Have a good one. Adios. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Don't Mom Alone podcast. If you're wanting to connect with more people and more resources to help remind you that you're not alone, head over to don'tmomalone.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guests. Most importantly, I want you to know the good news, the great news that you're not alone because God has promised to always be with you. With faith in Jesus Christ, the one who died for you and rose again, Jesus said when he left, he was going to leave a helper, a comforter, to be with us. God in us. Moms, that's superpower. So while you're washing dishes at your kitchen sink, while you're driving to and from work, while you're feeding that baby late into the night, while you're cleaning sticky floors, God promises to be just as present with you as when you're worshiping in a church pew. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's good news. Have a great day.